Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We did not get a chance to finish my comments regarding the UN asking for 10% from the world. I know that everybody listening to this show, and most conservatives, are starting to recognize that those who have been subscribing to, purporting, and pontificating that there is a cabal, that there is a conspiracy, that there is a global effort. If you're not reading some of these documents, such as the Rockefeller Report, this isn't a report that has been concocted and or supplanted and or fraudulently placed out on the internet. The fact of the matter is that these are real suggestions. These are real plans. These are real ideas. Rockefeller himself thanked the media. For over 50 years, they had been supporting his New World Order concept. And those are his words, not mine. Anyway, as you're starting to look at and you start recognizing, you know, where we're going, there, I mean, Gates is calling for, I mean, more and more people are calling, we need to have a world government. We need to have a world approach to saving humanity. Are you kidding me? I've been in the argument. And so I don't think I discussed this too much, but last week I had a long debate. I put out this concept, and I've said this before on this show, that the United States Constitution in Article 4 allows a state to petition the United States to become a state in the Union. Now, that does not mean that that state instantly becomes a state. There is a long, drawn-out process. As you know, Israel, and I'm going to use this as a metaphor, when Israel left Egypt, and for the first time, Israel was going to become a state. You got to remember, before that, it was just Jacob and his sons, right? Who, you know, it was kind of a small little family. And then Israel became a huge nation while they were held in captivity. So before they were allowed to enter what we call the, you know, Israel in the Middle East, they had to wander 40 days and 40 nights. In other words, they had to go through a cultural migration. They had to go through a paradigm shift. They had to change what they were doing, their thoughts and mentality. They had to, and that, biblically, that was a Lord requirement. I mean, the Lord said, you know, you guys aren't ready if you're not ready to go in now and take it because you don't trust me. Anyway, I don't want to get necessarily into the scriptural verse, but what I do want to use is that as a metaphor, because there is wisdom in allowing a state to slowly transition and prepare themselves legally, monetarily, contractually. There are some societies that will require even much more transition. And that's just because, you know, corruption is steeped deeply. And I've read that one, I want to call it a letter, but it was more of a rant from a person that worked in the Peace Corps that went over into Africa, and I forget the nation, but they were just pointing out that the families were corrupt. I mean, if you had a job, if you started a store, your family would be coming in and expecting you to give them everything. And and so that's one of the reasons why foreigners were far more successful in business, because everybody would take from everybody because they believed they were entitled. Well, you're going against the family? Sounds like a mafia thing, but that mentality is prevalent in a lot of different cultures. So anyway, the point here is that I had this long debate. We're going to, before I'm going to shift gears real quick. This show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And you are listening to the only show that provides academic, evidence-based solutions. Right now, and so if you understand the globalist intent, the globalists are selling this concept that we need to unite as a as humanity. Humanity needs to come together and create a government. Now, there may be a lot of Americans that may not buy into that, but there's too many Americans that are. And there's very few Americans that even realize that the United States can actually grow and get rid of the UN. It may take a long time because the UN, they'll take you any way they can, and then they corrupt you, and then eventually your leaders are basically conscripting those who go into the UN, and many of the nations that need the UN, they're conscripted. I mean, if you want to get a handout like Somalia and these other countries, for the U.S. to come in there, you're going to have to set up the government the way we want. And that is conscription. The UN is only looking to enslave us. So I'll get back into the G. Edward Griffin comment on this, but I want to get into the concept of globalism. So anyway, I threw this comment out and I said, look, if we're going to really start challenging China, if we really want to start challenging the paradigm that the direction this nation is taking and the world is taking, that what they are suggesting, what they are putting on the table for everybody to embrace, I am here to tell you, it is a very dangerous serum. It is an elixir that will strip us from our freedoms and our liberties, and we will be conscripted. Well, is there another alternative? Absolutely there is. The alternative is using the Constitution, going through the process. So anyway, I threw this out there that, you know, the United States has a constitution that stands against, it is the first in of its kind in the world for a true globalist representative government, a stable government. Now, again, there are cultural problems that have to be resolved in the transition process. But I'm telling you that if you look at the very beginning of the Constitution and the, you know, the history, the framers, everything else, why is it that the United States went to Canada and Mexico and said, hey, why don't you guys become a member of the United States? And Canada and Mexico said, oh, no, 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 you have slavery. And they didn't want to have anything to do with it. Now, Mexico wasn't much better because they were just corrupt and they had all sorts of problems. I mean, they were decimated by the draconian fascist society of the Portuguese, or the South America was Portuguese and Mexico was the Spaniards. I mean, they just decimated these nations and polluted their government with corruption. I mean, if you look at all those governments to the south of us, they are nothing but problematic because they don't understand individual liberty and individual sovereignty. The people have been subjugated. It reminds me of the behavioral case or situation test case that I remember reading about monkeys. There was a behavioral study done with monkeys. They had five monkeys in the cage. And they put bananas at the edge of the cage, or they placed it in the cage. And when the monkeys went to go get the bananas, there would be somebody there with a fire hose and hose them down with ice cold water. Well, the monkeys would retreat and they would stay away from the bananas. Slowly but surely, they replaced every single one of the monkeys. And every time they introduced took one monkey out and introduced a new monkey, when that new monkey would go after that banana, the other monkeys, because they didn't want to get hosed down with water, just pummeled this new monkey to say, are you kidding me? So they used group discipline to get that person to conform because they all didn't want to get punished. The interesting story is, though, that they actually had and recycled every single monkey out of that original five so that none of those other five monkeys, or all the five monkeys that were in the cage, none of them had ever been hosed with water. They had no idea what they were pummeling each other for. And so they had this culture in this cage that it doesn't matter why we get those bananas, we cannot eat those and we police ourselves, and they kept themselves from eating. That is groupthink, that's group behavior. Now, there are organizations that use groupthink. Some of them are conservative, like the JBS. And so I have real problems with anybody that has groupthink. But this post that I put out there, this post was basically pointing to the real solution to globalism. And, you know, people are saying, oh, well, globalism is bad. But actually, if you think about it, the United States Constitution was the first effort in trying to create a state of free states. There's no intent at all to subjugate the states under any religion, under anything that the United States government was basically kept to protecting us from external threats and making sure that we didn't cause a lot of problems internally by creating economic warfare between the coastal states and so forth. But we're at heartbreak, and I want to get back to this, so we'll be right back after this. Are you a patriotic proprietor of a business that is looking to get exposure on a fast-growing program? How would you like to get exposure on the only program on the air that provides an actual constitutional solution to all the federal government overreach and encroachments? If you understand the importance of educating the electorate, we would love to work with you in growing your business and revenues while you support the airing of our content on this station. Your support goes to growing the reach of this show and does not pay for elaborate salaries or highfalutin lifestyles. The show is growing fast, and we're also planning on airing the content about Republic Review on a video medium soon. If you'd like to be a part of history and the growth of the most relevant and result-oriented show on the air anywhere in the world, then just email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can lock in exceptional pricing and great advertising opportunities. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so the reason I'm telling you this story is what I'm getting to at this point. One of our biggest problems is our closed-mindedness as a society. There are way too many people that learn about a threat, and then they get steeped into their biases, the globalism, because I'll be the first to tell you, modern day globalism is a threat to humanity. It is the form of the new state of slavery. The United States was And anybody that wants to talk about this, even though slavery was allowed in the states, it was a state issue. It was a huge mistake. Anybody that has ever listened to the show for any period of time hears me go on and on about how they made the biggest mistake in history was to maintain slavery. Now, I'm going to get into another side comment because I was in a leadership meeting with a conservative organization, and I talked about civil rights, that the Constitution guarantees specific rights. Somebody piped up afterwards and said, look, you know, the Declaration of Independence, you know, identifies the fact that we are endowed with inalienable rights. Okay, I'm not going to argue the fact that the Declaration of Independence was the base document, but it and those concepts did not filter into the U.S. Constitution. And the reason it did not filter into the U.S. Constitution is, I have told you many times before, the U.S. Constitution was not based on declarations and or Bill of Rights. You've heard me say this many times, that the Bill of Rights have caused more damage than they've done good. When you start identifying what rights are reserved to the people, then all of a sudden you'll realize that you have forgotten something. Whether that have been abortion, whether that had been cloning, whatever it is. So the reason and the logic behind the framers is, we are only going to enumerate these powers. These are the necessary powers. This is all they can meddle with. Had we never written the Bill of Rights, we would have had a much stronger paradigm in understanding an enumerated constitution versus a general constitution. The only advantage, and I'm going to say this very clearly, the only advantage for the Bill of Rights was because of the Civil War. And that would have been the point in time where the states, because it was the states that were waging and taking away these inalienable rights from the people. Now, beforehand, they could have done it, and they had done it before. Madison pointed out that there were many states that were not offering Second Amendment rights and other privileges that were not guaranteed by the Bill of Rights. He pointed that out and said, you know, are we a more deficient system by creating this constitution of enumerated powers, where in your state you have general powers and you have no declaration of reservations of these rights? And so who's more safe? So anyway, as I got into this, and I've not followed up with that leadership meeting this week, but what I do want to do, and I will, but what I do want to do is, I want to impress upon you that there was an older gentleman. And when I say an older gentleman, he's probably in his 70s, maybe. And one of the things I've learned is that the older a person gets, the less objective they can be, because they get locked in their biases of, oh, well, if you say this, then that equates to this, and that's it. They're unable to actually look at, examine with an open mind, because they believe, you know, they're almost like a 20-year-old. Sometimes when you're dealing with people that have that level of age, that they're convinced that their wisdom is, you know, irrefutable, then it's almost like a 20-year-old, that you can't tell them anything because they know everything when they actually don't know anything. Right? I mean, anybody that's been a parent and has seen this transition in life, the typical 20-year-old is the person that knows everything, and you can't tell them anything. This is the point in time in life where most people skin their knees, they, you know, burn their elbows. I mean, they take a lot of lumps and bumps because they have to learn for themselves. Well, so some of those people that are really, really ardent in saying, you know, I know everything at age 20, they're even worse when they're age 70. So anywho, I threw this out there. I threw this as a constitutional fact that the United States possesses this. And I said, if Trump really wants to put China into a position where China has to take a defensive, Because if Trump actually solicited to Taiwan, solicited to Hong Kong, and some of the other nations that China is gaining a stranglehold on and is going to assimilate them into their communist regime, the best thing Trump can do is say, why don't you apply? Why don't you guys have a vote and apply to see if you want to become a state in the United States as an alternative to being a state of the Chinese Communist Party? Well, instantly, you know, I got these closed-minded, biased, you know, comments from this one person. There was another old man that was, you know, always liking, oh, I like that, because he's standing up to this new idea that they, you know, they don't even know. Well, it took a while. It took about four posts for this guy to come back and finally say, okay, you're right. The Constitution does allow that, but you need to hear Jordan Peterson on the, you know, on globalism, how globalism is evil. And so this is for those of you who look at Jordan Peterson he's a brilliant man. He's very well educated. He probably has a huge IQ. I'm a dwarf compared to him in the IQ, but he does not have the literacy. He does not have the understanding of our Constitution. Just like Ayn Rand did not have an understanding of our Constitution. That's why Ayn Rand was in Atlas Shrugged, and a lot of her portrayals of government, it was governments with general powers. In other words, the governments had the ability to do whatever they wanted to do to their people. And Ayn Rand didn't understand the premise of individual liberty and individual sovereignty. She didn't understand that we had not these inalienable rights, but we had these guaranteed rights. We had a guaranteed right of a republican form of government, not a democracy. There are many things that I took umbrage with Ayn Rand's philosophy. It's the same thing I take umbrage with Jordan Peterson's. Anyway, this gentleman that put this post out there, he had a link to a Jordan Peterson, you know, presentation or discussion, talk, or what have you, you know, where they just have a camera and he just babbles on. Anyway, he talks about the evils of globalism. And this guy tries to say, here's the argument that shuts you down. And I went back to this guy and I go, that's not an argument that shuts me down. And as a matter of fact, this guy is, technically, he was fixated on the messenger, me, and not the message itself, because he can't grasp how this can be used as a tool. As I went through this whole process, I had to repeat myself several times. You do realize that Hong Kong would not be a state in a year. You do realize that it would probably take 20 to 40 years for Hong Kong. And so you would be dead by the time Hong Kong becomes a state. And you don't understand that there's other things that need to be put in motion, but I'm only pointing out that a vehicle already exists to dismantle the UN and the global elitist plan of globalism. And two, we have a mechanism to guarantee and ensure individual liberty. And three, we also have what I'll call a fulcrum to actually start using leverage against these evil players, such as Russia, such as China, such as the EU, such as the UN. We have almost everything we need to be able to, if you ask me, to get the rest of the world to wake up and say, look, we're far better off if we start embracing liberty and we apply and go through the transition process of becoming a state. Now, I didn't have a chance to state this, but of those of you who are shuddering and worrying, one of the things that needs to transpire as well while these states become territories, states like Washington, states like California, states like Texas, states like, well, Alaska maybe not, But some of these states like Illinois, Indiana, every single one of these states needs to be split, and sometimes split a couple of times. I think Texas could be split a couple of times, and I there's no doubt in my mind California should be split several times over. But why? Why do we want to split these states? Because right now we have 50 states. If we actually started splitting the states, as I would recommend, we would probably be closer to 100 states. And as we bring in new states into the union, we would actually, it would take, I don't want to say it's insurmountable, but it would take a lot more states. And we want to make sure that, one, their culture and their education is where it needs to be, but we also need to preserve our culture, and by maintaining a higher supremacy in the Senate as well as these representatives in Congress, in the House of Representatives. I'm out of time. We'll be right back.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's, and if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so here's the problem that most people have, and it's not like Jordan Peterson can't get it, but you got to understand, it's not his fault. He's a Canadian, right? I mean, most Americans do not understand our structure of government, its limitations, and so forth. Most people, unless you're listening to this show, don't even understand that the federal government can't have Social Security and all these other programs. They're violating the Constitution. And within the Constitution, it has, kind of like most every oven today is equipped with self-cleaning, the Constitution has a mechanism, process, feature built into it that allows a self-cleaning and or purging of public servants who are violating the Constitution. But because we have illiteracy, we now have a federal government that is going to take us to $40 trillion in actual debt, not even talking about the unfunded liabilities. And I had a nice long conversation last night with a Trump supporter who I think I've mentioned this before. He happens to be a host on Patriot Soapbox 24/7 live stream. And our conversation last year was, I would like you to feed me a plate of crow. When is it that Trump is going to serve all of these indictments, arrest everybody, and clean up the existing deep state and get rid of corruption and, you know, put us on our path forward? Oh, it's going to happen. He's 2 steps ahead of everybody, 5 steps ahead of everybody. And I'm going, I'm sorry, I don't see it. So we had this conversation last night, and I said, are you still believing that the fact that he's just added multiple trillions of dollars to our debt, that he's the guy that's 5 steps ahead of everybody? Sure seems to me he's doing a lot of the same things that Obama, he may have used a lot of rhetoric and say, oh, well, the UN's bad, but we're still in it. He hasn't kicked them out. Where's the light in this tunnel? Because people keep on saying it's just around this next bend. It's just around this next bend. And I'm not seeing it, my friends. We need to ignite our state legislators. That's a better word. I was going to say initiate, but we need to ignite the fire under the feet of our state legislators and getting our state legislators to demand compliance to their contract. If they don't do this, and if they don't do it soon, I don't know. I mean, we're losing time. And this 2020 election will dictate which direction. You know, and I have full faith in the Lord. And I know the Lord can perform miracles that are beyond me. And I wouldn't be surprised to see that this, you know, Republic Review happens, or the Lord will do something completely different. Who knows? All I know is that the argument for Republic Review in getting the federal government into compliance to the Constitution is irrefutable. There is no other process. The Convention of States is a failed plan. And as a matter of fact, I tell people that you could actually, if we initiate Republic Review, the states should be able to have full confidence in telling Congress that they don't need the Article 5 convention anymore. Give us an amendment and remove that. Huh. Where are the John Birchers now? Because, boy, you'd think that they would love that idea, that the states would not be able to amend or rewrite the Constitution. Huh. Isn't that interesting? But, of course, it's about biases and being steeped and or believing what you're being told. So, bottom line, this gentleman, as I was talking to him about Jordan Peterson, I said, look, when you get Jordan Peterson talking about the United States Constitution and how limited it is, you know, how the federal government is supposed to be limited, they can't be doing these things. They can't have a Federal Reserve. They can't be dictating all of the things that they're dictating. They have a limited... and. If you understand by design what the general government is supposed to be doing and what the states are supposed to do, it is a divine form of republicanism and a divine form, if you want to call it, globalism. And I say that because states are still sovereign and independent. If you want to have a state that has that empowers themselves with general powers and has draconian tactics and measures, okay, then the people can vote with their feet, leave that state, put that state into bankruptcy. And, oh, by the way, the federal government has no authority or power to bail out a state. It just has to put that state into conservatorship and make that state pay its debt. And let those people rue the day. And, you know, there may come a point in time where it might be even just best to, you know, wipe out the debt. But I will tell you, the banks will take a different approach. But right now, banks are making money. What they're doing is they're creating debt, and they're the ones that are holding it. And so most people don't realize this, and I want you to understand this, because Bob Schultz even pointed this out to me a couple of years ago, that if the federal government is taking on debt for something that they have no authority to do, then that debt is illegitimate. So you have to understand that the federal government does not have a legitimate need for spending money on things it has no power to spend money on. In other words, it is creating a fraud pretense. It is committing fraud to the creditors and so forth. And those people who are buying that thinking, okay, we're going to have leverage over the United States, they're equally culpable as being wrong and committing fraud as well. You cannot, I mean, if a company comes to you, not a company, but if a government, if the city government comes to you and says, we want you to do this thing for us that is not within their powers, it's a state power, or maybe it's a federal power, then the fact of the matter is, if you go do that work and expect the city to pay you, and they do pay you, you're lucky you got away with violating the, you know, in committing fraud, because you have been engaged in a fraudulent activity with an entity that does not have the authority to do so. And Bob Schultz even pointed out there was a case in Washington State where the state government, who this part of the government did not have the authority to go out and obtain contracts, and had these companies, I think a very particular company, spent millions of dollars, if I remember correctly, on trying to initiate the work and getting the work done. And they went to the government and said, we have to get paid here. And they took them to court. And the court basically ruled, sorry, this government doesn't have the authority to do what you, or this part of this government doesn't have the authority to, you know, give you this contract. You've been duped into a fraudulent case. Now, the people that were committing fraud, they committed a crime. I don't know if they went to jail. That's a backstory I need. But bottom line, these gentlemen that have closed biases become very dangerous, because what ends up happening is they start creating a groupthink that all globalism is bad. They have a paradox and they don't even realize it. And I tried to point that out. And in the last comment that he put out there in this Liberty Caucus group was that I have a problem with, because I keep on focusing on the messenger. And I'm going, no, you're the one that's fixated on the messenger and not the message, because it was my message and you've just tried to refute it. And every time you've tried to refute it, whether it be, you know, in your argument space or and at points in time, he uses it ad hominem. In other words, he attacks me instead of actually, you know, providing supporting concepts or reference material or anything else to refute my argument. Instead, what he did was he came up with this other messenger that didn't have the same understanding. I mean, unfortunately, there's too many people that have limited view and understanding of the Constitution. There are people that probably understand the Constitution better than me, but most of them are not honest. I've ran into many that will look at the Constitution and they can get into case law, they can get into all sorts of things, and it's all unconstitutional. And they try to create a barrage of offenses in trying to put you back on your heels. And the reality is they have no base. They have no standing within the Constitution for making their assertions. So they'll come up with all of these citations of court orders and so forth. And I'm going, so where is it that the court has the ability to amend the Constitution? Near as I can tell, it requires 3/4 of the state for that to happen. Oh, well, you know, the court's rulings and they're final. You know, they have the jurisdiction over. And I go, no, they don't. If it's not an enumerated power, they don't have jurisdiction. And all of you have learned this. This is the power of understanding the ratification debates. This is the power of understanding the terms and definitions of the contract. So with that, we'll be right back. And I don't mean to beat a dead horse, but I think we finally settled this concept of globalism and the perfect design for it, where we have individual liberty and individual sovereignty. And with that, we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
I have been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so I just want you to understand that we do have paths and processes. We have fulcrums that we can use, and the Constitution provides us these things. So when we start looking at things, just don't take it in the micro of, a state, Estonia or Hong Kong or Taiwan, they're going to become a state. Well, they have a different culture. That culture will have to make some transformations. And as a matter of fact, Taiwan, they're kind of a free market country, but they do have some unique religious cultures. You have to understand that a state still within the constitutional framework with the 14th Amendment, a state can still declare a state-sponsored religion. The 14th Amendment only protects your individual privileges and immunities. The state still has the ability. So if Taiwan or some other state wants to come along, then they would have to have, as long as, and so the reason I'm bringing this up is because there are obviously some religions that are contrary to the constitutional paradigm of individual liberty and individual sovereignty. They believe that a theocracy should control. Now, there's a difference between a theocracy dictating laws that are contrary to the Constitution and a state actually having a state-sponsored religion administering welfare, education, those types of things. So I do have a problem with Mohammedan states coming into the United States. They can't. They are in direct conflict with the principles of our Constitution. So don't get worried about, Iraq or Iran or any of these other foreign Islamic states in becoming a part of the United States. They would have to disavow and they would have to maintain, because they cannot put their arms to the square and say they're going to support the Constitution when they directly support laws and the fundamental bases of Islam, which are not within the framework of the Constitution. So you have to really start looking at it from a macro view. And this is where the discussion needs to be made. This is where we have to start talking, well, what about this? And what about that? Instead of just saying, no way, it's dangerous because Jordan Peterson says so. And see, that's my point. If you're not going to debate it, if you're not going to examine it and go, well, what about this? And what? It's the same thing as in another social group, in a Wyoming Facebook page, I put out this concept that the states can actually quarantine those who are sick. And these health freedom nuts were just going, oh, are you kidding me? You know, everybody should be able to just roam free like we're just a bunch of animals and we can infect a herd. Are you kidding? And if you read my latest article on the Constitutional Perspectives page, it's also on the Constitutional Articles page regarding martial law and what the states can do and what they can't do, it'll help you understand that the states actually do have the constitutional authority and power to do this. Whether you like it or not, you may not like it, but they can do that. Well, isn't that better than denying everybody our liberty? Holding those people, the few people. So if you go into the state of Washington, you go into the state of New York on the coronavirus update page, there's a few hundred people in the state of Washington that would be denied their liberty instead of millions of people. Which is worse? Millions of people, everybody suffering, or just those who are sick that can do harm? And we can allow our economy to continue to thrive. Now, of course, see, people want to throw out these arguments. Well, what about the single mother that can't afford? Well, if government created the policy that you can't go to work, the only place you can be if you've got a virus, if you've got something that is contagious, that you can harm others, then you either have to stay home or you have to go to an appropriate medical facility, which means that the government then needs to pay for that. I'm going to tell you, it's a lot cheaper paying for that than it is to pay for unemployment and the shutting down of the economy. In addition, in the future, whether it be a flu, coronavirus, or what have you, employers are going to have to shift their paradigm so that they can help accommodate. And as a matter of fact, I've said this before, employers and businesses actually benefit from a law like that because they don't get crippled when all of a sudden the flu ravages their entire staff and they end up infecting everybody that comes into their store or into their establishment because they're all working sick. Had we had measures to keep the sick person out of the workplace, out of the place of worship, out of these places where this contagion can be passed and harm others, and see, that's what this dialogue, that's why we have to have the dialogue. Just to say no, and then, you know, not moving it further is about as closed-minded and is about as stupid or obtuse as one can be. I hope that as I age, I don't become more obtuse as I see in others. Because bottom line, we need to have an open and honest dialogue. And, I'm not an advocate for change for change's sake. Many a times I have recognized that what this will do, it's just a change. All it is. And it's like art for art's sake, right? Oh, well, I've got a picture on this wall. I need to put a picture over there to complement that. That's art for art's sake. No, you don't need to. You know, that piece of art stands for itself. It doesn't need company. Anyway, so I'm almost out of time for this entire show. So let me ask you this. What is it you're going to do? Are you going to be a part of the problem? Are you going to be a part of the solution? Because as you know, we want to have the open and honest dialogue of the solution so that as you hear it, you can go, well, that does make sense. Okay. But bottom line is, there's probably lots of questions that are keeping you from getting across that finish line. What are those questions? You know, we have a dial-in phone number. You can call us, 425-270-5416. 425-270-5416. And in doing so, you can actually get yourself into a discussion of the facts to say, okay, what about this? Yes, of course, you pass a law that, quarantine sick people. The state and employers need to change their paradigm. You know, one of the things I loved about where I worked, and I think one of the things that should be done, is that, one, either you can have a flexible work schedule so you can make up your time, or you can make it so that other people can, cover your time for you. You know, if people want to be charitable, why not allow them? You know, didn't the good Lord say, when you've done it unto me, done it unto the least of these, my brother, you've done it unto me. Why can't people be charitable in the workplace? Well, so one of the problems that people are fearful of being charitable like that for one another is the fact that that person, may be taking advantage. But that those things are all independent problems. They're things that we actually have to overcome because, there is a propensity of people trying to take advantage until we start really changing our paradigm. I don't think a good person would ever take advantage of another good person. And an honest and compassionate gesture done by another person. I've always had gratitude for anybody that has helped me out. And as a matter of fact, we have to be also cognizant of allowing people to help us. There's way too many people that are way too proud to say, no, I don't want charity. You know, it's okay for somebody to be charitable. You do realize that when you don't let somebody be charitable in helping you, you've just denied that person some blessings in offering you help and doing it to the least of these, their brethren. If you understand my point, why would we want to think that we would want to deny others the blessings and opportunities of serving and helping one another? This is where we can, I kind of went through this during the Christmas manipulation and so forth. We don't have to keep that paradigm of being in service, being compassionate and loving one another just one time a year. We need to adopt that mentality, that manipulative holiday, into an everyday type of thing. It's not about gifts. It's not about Christmas trees. It's about serving one another and giving one another. If you understand the very first Thanksgiving, it was a contribution of service to Him, not to your neighbors, but to Him. Go read that proclamation that George Washington wrote for our very first Thanksgiving. It had nothing to do with feasting on turkey or having a bountiful feast or football games or even pilgrims. It had everything to do with recognizing He who gave us this Constitution, who gave us our peace and tranquility, and serving Him in providing gratitude and thanks for the blessings we've received. My friends, we need to be able to have open and honest dialogues. And even though we may be wrong in our paradigms, we've got to stop personalizing it. It's not like I'm attacking you. I'm challenging your paradigm. So start working through that. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and Republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.